Fireflies Unite with Kia, your weekly podcast from the perspective of individuals thriving with a mental illness. We are normalizing the conversation about mental health within communities of color to foster mental wellness and empowerment. Hey, Fireflies. Today we're going to talk about something that is usually joked about, the illness of bipolar disorder. We usually say things like the weather is acting bipolar, or we'll jokingly say someone is acting bipolar without actually understanding what the illness looks like. More than 5 million people in the United States have bipolar disorder. People with bipolar disorder typically have mood swings that range from highs called mania to lows called depression. Unless you have severe mania, bipolar disorder can be difficult to diagnose. So today I really want to highlight a special young lady who battles with this mental illness. I want to welcome Dr. B. Duke, who struggles with bipolar disorder and anxiety. Despite battling mental illness since 2008, Dr. B. Duke still managed to graduate from the University of Maryland with a bachelor's degree in biological sciences and microbiology at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore of Pharmacy and Health Professions with a Doctor of Pharmacy degree. Since her diagnosis, Dr. B. Duke has developed a research interest in psychiatry and had the opportunity to do a project on pediatric depression at the FDA during a rotation her last year of pharmacy school. Dr. B. Duke currently works at the FDA as an ORISE postdoctoral fellow, working on a project to investigate the association between systemic biologics for plaque psoriasis and suicide ideation behavior. Thank you for joining me, Dr. B. Duke.
Thank you for having me.
I want to just tell a little bit about how you and I met, just so people can have a little background about us. So do you want to tell them or do you want me to tell them?
I guess we can tell them. I can start off and then I guess you can finish. So I was first introduced to NAMI back in 2008 when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, which is now progressed to bipolar depression with anxiety. So I always knew about NAMI, and my parents were involved with NAMI and contributing to NAMI. But it wasn't until I started seeing my therapist, Dr. Karen Allen, who suggested that I would really benefit from group therapy. So she gave me several links to some resources and some type of group therapy that I can get involved with. And I came across the NAMI peer-to-peer program. And so I called and see if I can come in, because it was actually the week after they started when I got news of it. So I called and I spoke with Amicia Gibson, who's one of the facilitators. She said, I can go ahead and join, even though they started the week before, because they had room in the class. So when I first started going, I met you, Takia, and we kind of clicked because we had similar backgrounds and similar diagnoses, and the onset of our disease was similar in terms of beginning in our early to mid-20s. So I could kind of relate and with you, and we kind of just kind of clicked and bonded off of that as we, went through the program together. So we were able to support each other and just kind of connect pretty much. So I don't know if you have anything further to say, but that's basically how we met. So I'm just fortunate to be a part of this podcast and kind of advocate for those who are struggling with bipolar depression and let them know that this is not the end, that you can progress and even have advanced degrees, and you might struggle from time to time, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. So that's all I have to say on that. So I don't know if you want to add anything, Zakiya, about that.
No, I think you hit it right on the nose. I know I tend to be a bit outspoken. So if I see, you know, someone that I feel as though like that I have a connection with, or someone that I just want to simply get to know further. I know I just remember in class, you seem like you would talk about your experiences, but you also seem like a bit reserved. And but like, again, like you said, we could relate on a lot. Of course, I didn't go into class thinking like, yeah, I'm going to make friends. But for me, I think it was important to not just, the class is called peer to peer. So with that is really, it's a blessing to be able to form a bond or a relationship with someone that can be your accountability partner, especially mm-hmm. someone who struggles with a mental illness. Because a lot of times, at least in my experience, it's like, yeah, I have friends, but if they haven't dealt with the mental illness, then they don't know what it feels like. Or even if sometimes people say that they've dealt with it, their responses sometimes let me know, one, no, you haven't really dealt with it, or either, of course, our experiences are different. So I don't really like to discredit people's experiences, but sometimes their responses, I'm like, well, if you really dealt with it, then your response would be different. But I just felt exactly. like when you and I talked, I was like, oh my God, someone gets it. So that kind of mm-hmm. just opened up a door to forming a new friendship. So that's really how Dr. Duke and I met. And so
I believe it's important to have that peer-to-peer support, because you have a psychiatrist who helps treat and manage your meds, and you have your therapist to help you get through cognitive behavioral therapy, but you don't have that support system where it's a peer. Because you're like, okay, I have all these medical professionals, but you need somebody who's struggling with the same thing so you can feed off each other and say, hey, I'm going through this. Can you help me with this? And go back and forth. And like you said, accountability partner. Like, we all have goals to reach during this process of treatment and recovery and remission. So to have certain goals and say, how can we meet those goals? And hold somebody accountable to reaching those goals is key, because you can relate to somebody on your level. Because sometimes, like even with me being a doctor, I feel like I can't relate to my doctor sometimes, even though I know all the meds, but I don't have that peer because he's not going through what I'm going through. He just sees a bunch of people and says, this is similar, so maybe I should treat her with this. But with the peer, I think it's very important to say, here, I have somebody struggling with the same thing, and they can relate to me, and they can be a part of my support system. So it's like broad, like having a broad support system. And I think that's key to recovery, and in terms of like checking in with someone. And like you mentioned, the accountability, I think that's key as well. So that's all I have to say about that.
I know I read your bio, but I really want to let you tell your story, because one of the things that I plan, that my goal is for this podcast is to allow people who struggle with mental illness to tell the story from their perspective. Because like I've said, there are definitely podcasts out there that talk about mental illness. But it's usually from a mental health or a medical professional. And so their perspective is usually different because they're the ones treating it and not the ones living it. And so that's something that I really pride myself on, because I want people to see that mental illness does not have a look. You can't look at someone, even though there's a broad spectrum of when you think of mental illness. There are some people who have mental illness who, yes, they talk to themselves, or they may seem like disoriented or incoherent. Like those are certainly people who struggle with the mental illness. But then it's also, everyday high functioning people like myself as well as you. You have a doctorate degree, you know?
Yeah, I'm considered a working professional, so I should have everything together and everything in line. I have a perfect life. I have a car that's paid for. I have a good job. I have a family that supports me. I have a home. I have all these things for someone on the outside looking in saying everything is perfect. But I struggle from day to day with my own internal battle of negative thoughts that start early in the morning, and I wake up with negative thoughts. So it's a struggle. So I don't look like what I've been through, pretty much. Like, you hear people say that in church. Like, I don't look like anything that I've been through. And that's with me, because bipolar disorder doesn't have a look like what you mentioned, because all that hell that breaks through, I don't look like that. I don't look like I've been through what I've been through, from elementary school, from being bullied by a couple of students in elementary school, and then middle school feeling kind of awkward, and then high school, doing fine in high school, but then once I got to undergrad, I kind of struggled a bit because I didn't feel like my high school prepared me enough for undergrad. So I struggled that first semester, but then I kind of bounced back the next semester. But I had an issue with my roommate where her boyfriend just kept coming and visiting, and I couldn't study and didn't feel like going to the library. So I wasn't doing my due diligence with my work. So that's why my grades weren't that great first semester at University of Maryland College Park. And then I met a guy my second year of undergrad, and then I lost my virginity to him. And it seemed like maybe at that first time or a couple times we were intimate, I discovered that I was pregnant, and I had no clue as what to do. And I was like, you know, I just can't do this, because pretty much I saw myself as a kid just messing around and playing around. I was like, as a kid, I can't have a kid. So then we discussed everything, and his parents agreed to pay for an abortion. And that whole process was just traumatic. Like, I was just completely out of it. And I was very disoriented afterwards. And his parents were very supportive in that. But I felt like it was like a big sin, and I felt really guilty about that. And then so I continued with the relationship, and we decided that we weren't going to be intimate anymore, and we're just going to just deal with the relationship. But then we threw out all the safety nets or safety precautions, like all the condoms and everything, because we're like, okay, we're not doing this. And then all of a sudden we got back to being intimate again, and then I got pregnant a second time. And at that time I was like, you know what, this is a second occurrence. I was like, I really want to have this child now. And by the time I was considering having a child, I was so far along that I began to show. Like, I wasn't showing the first one, but I began to show this one. And then my mom just blatantly asked me, are you pregnant? And it was like a sigh of relief. And I was like, yes. And she was like, oh my gosh, we cannot do this. Because she hated the guy that I was dating. And she's like, no, we can't do this. So then they took me to the abortion clinic, and that was even more traumatic because I was so far along that they had to do a 2-day procedure for the abortion, and that was very traumatic. And I sought counseling after that, but it wasn't helpful because I felt like the lady was just not listening, because she was like, oh, so you said you had a major decision to make. And I was like, no, that's not what I talked about last week. So I didn't have a connection with that therapist. So I just ended therapy. And then, so that was back in 2005 to 2006. So I met that guy in 2005. And then I had two abortions in 2006. And then I broke up with him after the second abortion. And then he ended up transferring to a different school because of the whole situation. And then by 2007, I was at a church event, and they said that they're starting a program for post-abortive women. So I signed up for the class, and it was just basically Christian condemnation. And I felt like, okay, I sinned, and I can't be forgiven. And I just felt really, really bad. Like, that whole program was just not right for me, because the church that we were going to, we eventually left that church, but that program was very traumatic for me, because it made me feel like, even though I was among other women who were post-abortive, the facilitator was just like, you sinned and you've fallen, and that's the end of it. Like, I didn't feel any relief or any kind of like feeling of forgiveness.
It's basically like they condemned you.
Yeah, like they condemned me. And for me being so young, I was probably like the youngest person there. There were some older women there, middle-aged women there, and I was in my 20s at the time. So I kept that guilt and shame for a long time. And even to this day, I still feel a little bit of it. But that was in 2007. And then by 2008, it was time for me to graduate from undergrad. So I graduated, and that was like the happiest moment in my life. Sigh of relief that I finally accomplished one of my goals, which was undergrad. And then I was going to pursue pharmacy. After I graduated in the summer, I took a summer program for entering Howard's Pharmacy School that fall. And that was traumatic, because they were basically scaring us into saying, oh, it's going to be hard. You got to know this, this, and that. And I was just fearful and just traumatized. So I just had a breakdown. I was like, you know, I can't do this. I just had a mental break. And it was like, they considered it a manic attack, because I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping. I was just like frantic. So then I ended up in the hospital after that. So I went to go see the primary care physician. He prescribed just some anti-anxiety meds, because he thought it was just anxiety, but it was something more traumatic. And that's when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, because I ended up at Johns Hopkins Hospital for evaluation. And then they sent me to Sheppard Pratt, and I was in Sheppard Pratt for about a week or so, and they put me on Risperdal, and that made me really, really sleepy. Like, I was very fatigued and out of it, and I appeared drunk. And then instead of considering that maybe I should take a year off from school, I was so determined to go back to pharmacy school that after I left the hospital, I went straight to school, because it was time for fall semester. And then I didn't do well in one of the classes. I don't know. It's pretty interesting how I managed to pass all my classes except for one. And that was the same one that I struggled with in the summer when they were introducing that class, because there were like a lot of people fail that class. So they're trying to prepare us for it in the summer. And I ended up failing that class. So then I had to take it the next year. But by spring semester, I was doing really good. I was getting A's in all my classes. And for some reason, I just had a break, because I kept switching doctors, switching therapists, and switching meds. And I just got tired. I was like, you know what? I'm not taking these meds. So I just came off my meds and just dealt with life. And I just completely crashed. And that's when the depression set in, because at first I was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and then it was bipolar disorder because of the depression piece. So I was in the hospital for 2 months in the spring of 2009. And then I came out. I was prescribed a med that worked really fast, which was Zyprexa. And that got me out of the hospital, because I was able to get better. And they're considering ECT, which my mom was completely objecting, because of what she researched about having short-term memory loss. And I needed my short-term memory to recall things from school if I was going to be a pharmacist, so she knew that. So she was like, no, we're not doing the ECT. And luckily I got better and got out of the hospital. And then I had to get a medical withdrawal from school and then re-enter school. So when I re-entered, they allowed me to re-enter school and retake that class that I failed, which was anatomy and physiology. I failed it again. So by that time, I was on academic probation again. And they said, you know, you failed the class twice, so that's it. You got to be removed from school. And I signed an appeal and everything, and that got denied. So then I was just really depressed, thinking, what am I going to do? But for some reason, there was something inside of me, and this is what I have to this day. There's something inside of me that still has me keep going, the perseverance, the tenacity, the strength. I have just a little bit of strength and the faith of a mustard seed to get me through everything that I go through. And that's what allowed me to get into Prince George's Community College and take anatomy and physiology there. And I took 1 and 2 and got A's in both classes and transferred those credits to a different pharmacy school, which was University of Maryland Eastern Shore. So they accepted me. And at the time I was seeing a doctor, Dr. Hunt, who was my psychiatrist, and he was really well and got me stable enough to get through pharmacy school for the 3 years I was at UMES. And I did really well in school, and I got into Roe Chi Honor Society, which is the top 20% of students for academic performance. And then for some reason, I got scared during my last year of pharmacy school, because this is when I had to apply all my knowledge, and I was going to transition out of school to the real world, and all my fears and negative thoughts came. And I was working at the time during pharmacy school, and I ended up just having a breakdown because I couldn't deal with retail pharmacy. And I said, you know what, I just can't do this. So I ended up at Anne Arundel Medical Center, and they just gave me some anti-anxiety meds. They kept switching my meds, which was kind of like, okay, you guys don't know what you're doing if you keep switching everything. So I was kind of a little apprehensive of my medical team, because it's like it seemed like they didn't know what they were doing. But by 2014, I was trying to figure out, okay, why am I feeling this way? Why am I so anxious? Is it because I'm graduating and I don't know what I want to do with my career, or what was it? But I ended up having a breakdown because I couldn't reach my psychiatrist, Dr. Hunt, and I later found out that he passed away, and I was devastated because he was going through a lot with other medical issues. So with him passing away, I felt like, man, he's the only person who got me on track to get me through school and everything, and now he's gone. What am I going to do? So that's how I ended up at Anne Arundel Medical Center for suicide ideation. And they released me on anti-anxiety meds. And then I just took FMLA from work as an intern with Walmart. And then luckily, someone called me to work in New Jersey for a pharmaceutical industry job. And that was really good because I did really well on my own. That was my first time being in my own apartment and paying my own bills and being responsible. So I was like, you know what? I can do this. I can live with this disease and be successful. And I felt really good about that. But unfortunately, Medicare did an audit on the company, and the whole medical affairs team got let go, which was all the pharmacists, including myself and then my boss. So I was like, kind of like, okay, what do I do now? Like, I just got this apartment. I can't afford to break my lease. What's going to happen? I started to get depressed during my last year of pharmacy school because I had to move back home and do my rotations here in D.C. and Baltimore. And I kept longing for that independence again. Because every time I came home, I got depressed. So now I'm at a position where I'm in my dream job, working two jobs pretty much, and I'm doing everything that I want to do, but there's something about home that just keeps me depressed. But there's still this inkling of me that keeps me pushing through and keeps me going. So I just want to encourage others to just have that little small piece of faith and hope that can get you through and persevere through this illness, because this is a real illness. It's not a make-believe thing like mind over matter. You can just turn it off and on and just take a med and be done with it. Pretty much that's my mental health journey, and it's still going on because I'm considering doing transcranial magnetic stimulation in January to help me get off of all my meds and be totally transformed and recovered and my disease in remission, so I can be completely cured, because it's just a struggle. Every time I'm off, I struggle. Every time the weekend comes, I struggle. And then I manage to get myself back together and get myself at work where I feel like I'm in a safe place at work. I don't feel like home is comforting. So I just got to get my independence back. So that's all I wanted to say about that. I know it was long, but...
No, that's okay. That's okay. I listened to your story, and I'm pretty certain that other people will agree. You know, you use words such as strength and hope and tenacity, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And it's, I believe that to be true. It's just that when you're in it, it's like impossible to see it. Like, it's one of those things where you're like, it's never going to get better. It's always going to be like this. But like you said, if you just have as much faith as as small as a mustard seed, you know, you'll have the strength just to kind of make it through. And so that's why I always tell myself, and I encourage other people, try not to look at the big picture. Just take it day by day. If day by day becomes too much, then you go moment by moment. Thank you for sharing your story. Just with, we were just, talking about bipolar disorder. You know, I mentioned that more than 5 million people in the United States have bipolar disorder. And I want you to explain to people who may not know what bipolar disorder is, what it actually is, what does it, you know, and not saying what it looks like, because a person can actually see what it looks like, but what does it feel like? Like, take the person through the journey of what bipolar disorder is for you.
Well, for me, it's the ups and downs, the highs and lows. So I can be, it's the mania mixed with depression. And mine is mainly depression. So mine is bipolar depression. But bipolar is like two things, mania and depression. So I can have a high where I'm like, oh, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like I'm on top of the world. I can do anything. And to some people, that's like, oh, that's good. That's fulfilling and stuff like that. But you have to be cautious about it if you're kind of like over excited. And most people feel comfortable more with the mania than the depression. Because with the mania, it's like, oh, you're feeling good. You're on top of the world. But that mania can cause a crash. So that high, that's so high. Like, oh, I'm abundant. I can do anything. I'm this. I'm such. I'm having like delusions or whatever. Like visions of grandeur. Saying like I'm so grandiose. I'm everything. And then you have a complete crash after that. And that's what I experience sometimes at work when I get praise and accolades, and I'm like on top of the world. I'm like, yeah, I'm this. I'm that. I'm doing good. And then all of a sudden I hit like a deep, a crash, like, you're nobody, you're nothing. And then it's that depression piece, that those ups and downs that just keep, that are constant. So it's never a flat stability. It's always up and down, up and down, up and down. and I'm just trying to get that stability. So that's what bipolar disorder looks like, the ups and downs that you have to deal with. And like I mentioned before, most people prefer the ups because they feel better like that. But then with the ups, you're like so high up that you feel like you don't need to eat, you don't need to sleep, and then you have these psychotic episodes. So the mania is the psychosis. The depression is the sadness and guilt and shame and anxiety. So that's what it looks like. That's what bipolar disorder looks like. And it's an everyday struggle. Like we talked about before, you just got to have that inkling of saying, look, I got to get through this day. I got to get through this moment. If I'm feeling depressed, I'm going to take a nap, but then I'm going to wake up and be productive or do something that makes me happy or just find something to break out of it. And it's hard to just snap out of it like other people think you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But you just got to have your techniques like meditation, deep breathing, tapping.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm so glad that you said that because my next question was, how do you manage it? So you kind mm-hmm. of started going into that. And for
sometimes, for me, sometimes I'm so, like, since I had bipolar depression, at first it was just bipolar because I had the manic episode. Yeah, that's where I had to break out my coping mechanism. And my main one is just going to sleep, have a quiet place, and I just sleep. But there are other techniques that are more productive than just feel like you just want to sleep. Because there's a point where I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wish that I die in my sleep. And that's not what you want. Because if you just sleep all day, you just get groggy and just in a bad mood. You got to have techniques to break out of that vicious cycle of spiraling down. So you got to have your self-guided meditations or something on the app. You got to have your meditation music on your Pandora or your Apple Music. You have to have uplifting words or encouraging words to like recite and look at, encouraging Bible verses like Philippians 4:6-7. Be anxious for nothing, but through everything, through prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God, and the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and mind through Christ Jesus. Like, that gets me through. And another one is Jeremiah 29:11, about God saying, I know the thoughts that I have for you, thoughts of peace, not of, I don't know the whole scripture, but basically thoughts to prosper you and to give you a future and a hope. So you just got to keep reciting those things and memorizing those things. And I actually have that scripture on my door, so as soon as I come in, I read it. But just got to have encouraging words, because I only see my therapist once a week. But sometimes I need encouragement like pretty much every day, but at least twice or three times just to get through certain situations. So sometimes, like the song says, encourage yourself. You got to encourage yourself. You have to be your own advocate. You got to advocate for yourself, because you can have all these medical professionals, but then if you don't believe in yourself or if you don't do your work, then it's just a waste of their time and your time and going and paying for the services. So you got to put these strategies in place that you're learning with your therapist and your psychiatrist and through group therapy, having a recovery plan. You gotta do your work. Like Ayanna would say, you gotta do your work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, when you say that, doing the work. Yes, that is true, because therapy only works if we work it, because we can go and talk about things, but if we don't apply, you know, what we've learned in therapy to our everyday lives, it's pointless, just like you said. And so I think it's important that people understand that going to therapy works. I believe therapy works wonders. Seeing a psychiatrist to help you with your medication management is great. And with also when you mentioned having a recovery plan, people must also understand that there, you know, like you said, so we talked about with this recovery plan, of course, it can include therapy. It also can include seeing a psychiatrist. It also includes your coping strategies as well. And so it's one of those things that people realize that it's always going to be, recovery is lifelong. It's not like you get to a moment and it's over, because it's always going to be a battle. And yeah. I think with that is like, just for people to understand that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to have moments, you know, when your mental illness could be on an extreme high and you're just, you know, completely like out of it. But when you get to that point, still get the help that you need. Even though it's easier said than done, because a lot of times when people deal with the mental illness, it's so much easier to stay in bed because of all that is going through your head, and it begins to take a toll on your body physically and you're exhausted. Like I'd say that all the time. I was like, people think it's just what's going on in the mind. Yes, it's going on in the mind, but it takes a toll on your entire body. There are moments, and even for myself, where I start to, you know, have body aches, or if I'm not having body aches, I may be very like lethargic and tired and exhausted. And so I really don't have strength to do anything else. And so I think
it's because your mind is the powerhouse for your body. Mm-hmm. If your mind isn't right, then your body can't function, because you have your hippocampus that does everything with the hormones and everything, that the signals that go from your mind to your body. So your mind is so powerful that doctors don't even know anything about the mind. They know stuff, but they have no idea about everything that the mind can do. We use only a certain percent of our brain. Like, there's so much more to learn, and it's like trial and error with these drugs, because you never know what can work with each person. So it's just hard. And I was introduced to pharmacogenomics a while back, and I always had an interest in that. And I talked to my doctor about it, and he's like, oh, that's just made up stuff. So I'm like, okay, so we can't even determine based upon our genetic makeup that what drugs work for us? Like, so that's all fictitious? Like, how do we solve everything? Because things are different for every person. No regimen is going to be so strict for every person. It has to be personalized medication. Everything has to be personalized. Like, a therapist can't have the same techniques for everybody, because everybody comes in with different things. So it has to be like personalized care. And the only person that can do the most, not the most, but it's very important for us to be in tune with our bodies and our minds, so we can say, hey, this isn't right, and go to seek help and say, I'm feeling this way, and just be your own self-advocate. Because sometimes if you're living alone, or if you're living with somebody who doesn't know what's going on, they can't say, hey, you seem different. Let's get some help for you. Everybody doesn't have that, but everybody has themselves. Sometimes it's just a lonely battle, but then you have your peer-to-peer group, which helps. Sometimes other people pick up on it, and I'm thankful for that, because sometimes I can be struggling by myself and just feel like I'm just lonely and isolated. But when I was working on Wednesday and I was helping a student with math, she's like, something's wrong. You don't look right. And I was just like, oh, I'm just tired. But she's like, no, what's going on? So then I told her about a situation, and she's like, you know what, you need to go home. Let me walk you to your car. And that's like the best thing that could have happened to me, because I was just stuck. Sometimes I get so wrapped up in my depression and my anxiety that I get stuck and I can't move. And I'm like, okay, what do I do? And I'm just like pondering in my mind, like, how do I get out of this? But I'm just physically stuck. Like, I can't move. My brain just shuts down. And it's really embarrassing when it's in public. So she was like, okay, come on, let's go. We just got to go. So with that, I was like, okay, I got to tell my body to get up and walk out. And I was just saving grace that she was there with me. And she had no clue what was going on. But I needed her at that moment because I just felt stuck in a rut. And sometimes we just feel like that, like we can't move. So all we do is sleep, can't move our bodies and can't function. So you got to like fight through all that. And it takes a lot. I have to say it takes a lot for me just to hear my alarm every morning, to go to work and then leave work to go to my second job 3 days a week. And then by Thursday, I'm like done. Like, I'm like, okay, there's no way I can do anything. The recovery plan, you can be recovered, you can be in remission, you can be cured. I know people who've struggled with it for 10 years and now are off their meds and thriving, but they're still doing things to get them through the small pieces that they might be cured from a disease. But they still have everyday struggles like everybody else has everyday struggles. Because when I talk to people who don't have bipolar disorder or don't have a mental disorder, they're like, I struggle with things and I get through it. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not diagnosed with what I have. But I'm struggling too. So I can't have a conversation with them because they're like, well, I'm going through XYZ and you're going through XYZ. What's the difference? Mm. Like, no, there's a chemical imbalance that prevents me from doing things. So it's not that easy where I just snap out of it like you can. And it's not like you're stronger than me because you don't have the disease. I'm even more stronger because I'm getting through a whole bunch of stuff with the disease and you're struggling with similar things like waking up. There are people who don't want to wake up and go to work. They hate their jobs. To me, I love my job, but I still struggle to get there, making sure I take my meds to even drive to work. So small little normal things that people deal with, it's a struggle for me. And people will say, I hate traffic too, but I get through it. Yeah, it's different for me. And people don't get that.
You know what?
They're like, Brittany, you're just, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know what? I think that is like a big thing that you could have brought up because people do that. I think naturally as people, I was just telling this to a friend. I think naturally as people, when someone is talking about a problem, we naturally, like as people, we're problem solvers. So we want to solve the problem or we want to have a connection and say, oh, I understand. I understand. I've gone through that. But we really need to stop doing that because in my experience, it, for one, it discredits what that person is going through. If someone is telling you, I have bipolar disorder and this is my experience, and you say, oh, I had an abortion too. Oh, I had traffic too. Okay, yes, I understand we go through similar things in life. But like you said, for someone who has a mental illness, it is amplified. And that's what people do not understand. And
yeah,
that's why I have to tell people all the time, like, don't do that. Don't say, like, I remember when I told someone, in my case, I said, oh, I have, major depression and generalized anxiety disorders. And they said, oh, I was depressed too. Okay. And then once I started explaining to them what depression was, they was like, oh no, I said, yeah, you experienced some sadness, which is a perfectly normal human emotion. But depression is a mental illness, and it is also not a synonym for sadness. I have to tell people that I wrote an article on the difference between sadness and depression, because while people who have depression or experience depression, we certainly experience sadness, but it's just not sadness. And I think that's what people have to understand. And I'm so glad that you shared that. And even too, you've mentioned, you know, just from hearing you talk that, you know, you are a believer in Christ. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was, how has your experience as a Christian influenced or either discouraged you as dealing with a mental illness? What are things that maybe people in the church have said to you to make you feel worse or better? What has your experience been like?
I had mixed experiences, mixed emotions about Christianity and dealing with mental illness. My pastor is really good about dealing with certain things, but I feel like overall the Black church feels like you can pray your way out of everything. You can pray your way out of depression. You can pray your way out of anxiety. No, it's not going to go away like that. Yes, God has the ability to do exceedingly abundantly above all we can ask or think. And when we ask for healing, he can do that. He can heal us. But it's not going to be a simple prayer that we pray every day. I pray every day, like, get me through traffic, get me through simple things, get me through it. And God gives me the ability to do that. But it's not like it just goes away. Like, I'm still dealing with it. So, yes, people say you can pray your way out of certain situations. But I feel like with mental illness, it's the everyday struggle that keeps popping up. So I feel like it's unfortunate that the Black church just wants you to just give it all. I mean, yeah, you got to give it to God. Let go and let God. All those sayings and things that people tell you. But it's like, it's hard because you have a negative thought and you can't just let that go to God. You're just not going to say, oh, I want to kill myself or I want to die in my sleep. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to let go and let God. That doesn't work. You got to be more proactive because faith without works is dead. So you got to have faith, but you got to have the works. The faith piece alone is just, oh, I'm just going to pray my way out of it. The works is actually doing something about it. And that's what the Black church fails to do. They don't do anything about it. They just say, just have the faith. Just have the faith and believe. But what is the action that I got to take? They don't do that. The only church I know who is actively involved in mood disorders is this church called Grace Baptist Church in Bowie, Maryland. But they encourage other people in the community to do presentations on mood disorders and ways to come out of it. And they have scriptures that they read and action steps. So you got to be proactive. And I feel like the Black church is not proactive. They're very passive about the mental illness.
Yep.
And it's a shame because Black people, we're either struggling alone as working professionals or whatever, because the disease is disguised in so many different ways, or you have people in jail. You have Black people with mental illness in jail because there's no other way for them to do anything. So it's like they might not have committed a crime or they're homeless or whatever. That's a typical thing that people see, like, oh, they're mentally unstable, so they're in jail or they're on the street and they're homeless. But they're everyday people struggling with this, and it's hard. Like how can a church have a prison ministry or a divorce ministry, divorce care ministry, or same-sex attraction ministry, and then not deal with mental illness?
Like, uh-oh, like, someone's preaching up in here today.
Yeah, like, how can you have all that? Like, there are people struggling as they go through divorce because they have a mental illness. They're not touching on that point. They have all these different ministries, and they don't have one on mental illness, which is the main thing. Because it's all about your mind. You got to have the right mindset. And you got to rejuvenate your mind. And it's just, I don't know. I just had just bad experiences with church to the point where I don't even want to go anymore. But I still managed to either watch online or go with my parents.
I think with that, though, you brought up a great point. You know, when you say we have all these ministries in the church, but here's the thing. I always use this analogy. I say, if I fall down the stairs and break my leg, even if as a Christian, people may very well say to me, you know, I'm praying for a speedy recovery. I'm praying for your healing. But they will also ask, oh, did you go to the doctor? You probably need a cast or an X-ray. Yeah, because I have to do the things in the natural, but I also have to do the things in the spiritual, because I always say, you know, the term supernatural, God does the super and I do the natural. So together we make supernatural when we want to, you know, use that terminology. But at the same time, it's like God also still provided us with resources on earth. Now, that's not to say that we should rely on it or put our faith in man or in things, but he also gave it to us to use it. And so but the flip side to that is a double standard, because if I'm sick, if I'm struggling emotionally or I'm sick in my mind, your immediate response is to just pray it away or, you know, you'll be fine. But because it's physical, it's like you're more inclined to have more compassion. But when it's mental or emotional, it's kind of like, oh, you'll be okay. And so that's the thing that I want to encourage people who are involved in the Black church, whether it's members or clergy, to make sure that, you know, we continue to open this conversation. And with that, I'll transition, because, you know, I can talk about that for a long time, but what are some of the myths that you want to put to bed about people with bipolar disorder?
I think one of the myths is that we are crazy. We're not crazy. Our mind just works differently. Our mental or our chemicals in our brain work differently. So we're not crazy. We just have to struggle. We just struggle with things because our mind is built differently. So we're not deranged all the time. We're not angry all the time. We're not
violent.
We're not talking to ourselves in the street all the time, even though you see people doing that. That's not true. And then another thing is that this is a lifelong sentence. It's not a lifelong sentence. I know people who have struggled for 10 years and recovered and are off meds, because sometimes things can be situational where a situation will trigger something. But if you're able to handle that trigger or just avoid it completely, you can be recovered and restored. So it's not lifelong sentence, like most people will say, or a psychiatrist will say, it's lifelong medication management that's required. I don't believe that. I believe that it can be completely cured, even though most people will say, oh, it's a chronic condition, like diabetes. You will always need medicine with diabetes. But there are people who are out there on the radio talking about how to reverse diabetes. So I feel like bipolar disorder or any mental disorder can be reversed with medication and other treatments and therapy, and you can live a life normally by being chemically balanced. It's all about balance in life, and obtaining that balance is key, and avoiding your triggers or even knowing your triggers, because some people don't even know the triggers. They just happen to go through life and something would trigger something. They're like, oh, why do I feel like that? Well, it's important to know your triggers so you can avoid them.
Or know how to manage them too when they
how to manage them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess another myth will be that we're addicted to medicine, and that's not true. Like, there can be certain medications that are controlled substances, like for anxiety, the benzodiazepines like Xanax, Klonopin, what are the other ones? Diazepam, Valium. all the PAMs, clonazepam, alprazolam, lorazepam, diazepam, all those are controlled substances, so you can have some type of tolerance or not addiction, because it's not like an opioid, but there's some things where you feel like you're dependent on your meds for everything, and you have to, you're like, oh, I need all my meds. No, we're not addicted to meds. We just have to take them regularly to be stable enough to get through the day. So we're not druggies. Some people with mental disorder do abuse opioids because that's just what they do. But all of us, that's a myth. Not all of us are opioid addicts or heroin addicts or druggists. That's just a myth. I think that covers everything that I know about some of the myths, but there are others out there that people experience. But I just want to clarify those aren't true.
I think that's true. I mean, you couldn't have said it better. And I think with that, when we talk about those myths, I think one of the things that come to mind is for people who have a mental illness, in particular, we're talking about bipolar disorder, but what are some of the ways that family and friends can support someone with a bipolar disorder?
I think being an active listener is key. Like listening first and saying something that would provide encouragement and not condemnation. Like dealing with my parents, particularly my mom. My dad recently started doing this because he's sticking up for my mom now. And he used to be a person of comfort and someone I can go to with all my problems and he'll be more encouraging. But now he changed his tone. So I feel like I have no one to listen or talk to who would just listen and be an active listener and provide encouragement. But my mom will say things like, you know what, I don't think you're fighting hard enough. I don't think you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. I'm like, how is that when I have a doctorate degree? I have a job now when I didn't have a job last year. So I managed to work and I picked up a second job. So I'm doing that. I'm making money. I'm paying my rent to live in this house. What else do I need to do to convince you that I'm fighting? Like, what do you think I'm not fighting because I have because I spiral down? No, you need encouraging words like, okay, you can get to this. What are some of your strategies? Come on, let's do the strategies together. Like being in tune with our mental illness and say, doing research. Like when I did research on TMS and I sent the articles to my parents, they didn't even read it. They didn't even read the packet of information that my doctor provided. So I'm like, okay, so you guys aren't active in my plan or my support system. You're supposed to be my support system. And you're not following through on doing the research on something that I'm considering, but you want me to fight and fight alone. That's not fair. That's not fair for me to just fight for myself by myself. Like I need a support system. And that's what I encourage families to do is be a part of the therapy. Go to a therapy session with your loved one who is struggling. Go to a doctor's appointment. You don't have to go to all of them, but just go to one and say, oh, I noticed that such and such was feeling this way, so how can we help? Or the therapist might ask, okay, what's your perspective on how such and such is feeling? So being an active participant in your loved one's care is key. So one, being an active listener. Two, being a person who is active in the plan, in the care plan. And three, just having words of encouragement. Don't put down people and say that they're not doing their work. They can feel that. They can feel like, okay, I'm struggling. They know that they're struggling. They don't need somebody to tell them, oh, you're not working hard enough. You're not fighting hard enough. That's going to make you even more depressed.
Yeah, I can agree more. Definitely. Mm. I think it does make a difference. Like even just, I had a case where my friend said, you know, she wanted to come to a session with me. And I was like, I got so full because it was like, that meant so much to me. I don't need someone to come to therapy with me every week, but mm-hmm. the fact that she took the initiative and said, I want to know what this illness is like for you. I want to know how to help you feel better. I want to know how to get you mentally healthy. What can I do to be a support to you? And that is so encouraging. And I know people say like, oh, call me and let me know if you need anything. But sometimes it takes a little bit more. Sometimes we need people to take the initiative and say, you know what? I want to come with you to, you know, your therapy appointment. If that person will, you know, if you will allow me to come with you, you know what? I'll pick up your medication for you today. Don't worry about it. It's just little things like that that does go a long way. And so, yeah, I couldn't agree more. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to add about bipolar disorder?
I think the only thing to recap is that it's an everyday struggle, and it's the most misdiagnosed disease. And it's very, very hard to diagnose because people struggle with so many different things like anxiety and OCD, dysphoric disorder, and personality disorders, and schizophrenia. You have to struggle with highs and lows, and you're just hoping that one day you'll make it where you just at that flat stability, that you're just stable. You don't have that high or that low, that you're just like
coasting in the middle.
Maintain, huh?
I said that you're just coasting in the middle, in the neutral zone, in the balance zone.
Yes, in a neutral zone, yes. And yeah. I feel that that's what people need to understand about bipolar disorder, because people feel like, oh, you're just crazy. No, you have mania and you have psychosis. It's a chemical imbalance. It's not our fault. It's not something we made up or we did something to earn it, or it's not something that we brought on ourselves. It can be genetic. It can be environmental, like an environmental trigger, but most likely it's genetic. Like mine is genetic because it comes on my mom's side of the family. And people feel like, oh, it's your fault because you didn't do X, Y, Z, or you didn't do this or that. Like, no, we were just born this way. And people just need to realize that it's not our fault. And people need to realize that you're not alone. Other people struggle with this, and they're living everyday lives, and they're doing fine. Some people are doing worse. Some people are doing better. And some people are just in the middle. I guess that's all I want to say, just to wrap up.
Well, yeah. I want to thank you, Dr. B. Duke, for joining the Fireflies Unite podcast. It's definitely been a pleasure and a joy to just have you tell your story and what it's like day to day for a person struggling with bipolar disorder. So we are going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with the therapist shout out.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Takiya.
Yes, thank you so much. And I certainly appreciate it. And of course, you and I will be in touch as we always do. We talk pretty much almost every day.
Every day, yeah. All right, take care. All right, thank you so much for having me.
And we're back with the therapist shout out. So don't forget to send your therapist shout outs to podcast@fireflyesunite.com with your therapist's name, website, and the city that he or she is located. So this week, our therapist shout out goes to Karen Allen, and she is located in Bowie, Maryland. Her website is imaniconsulting.com. So feel free to check her out. And we want to thank her for all the great work that she's doing in the community. For today's Mind, Body, and Soulness segment, I want to encourage anyone who may be dealing with bipolar disorder to seek treatment. Or if you know someone who may be struggling with this illness, to support them and encourage them to seek treatment. Do not judge them and say things like, "Did you take your medicine?" or "You're acting bipolar." Simply support them however they may need support. I recommend talking to a psychiatrist and a therapist to help you develop a treatment plan. A psychiatrist will help you with your medication to make sure that you're taking the right medication, the dosage, and see how it's working for you. I encourage you to be patient, because if it's your first time taking any type of medication for a mental illness, it could take a while before you find your recipe to see what actually works for you. And therapy, your therapist will really help you work through any problems that you may have or any concerns, and really help you develop strategies for how to deal with your mental illness. You can also look into partial hospitalization programs, and you can contact your insurance to learn about those programs, and as well as your local hospital. Bipolar treatment may include, again, medication, behavioral therapy, substance abuse treatment for some. And right now we are going to move right along to the journal entry segment. So please don't forget to send your journal entries to podcast@fireflies.unite. Your name will remain anonymous unless you choose to disclose your name, or you can use a alias name or a code name if you would like, whatever you feel comfortable with. So this journal entry says, "Dear Kia, I recently found out that my best friend's brother suffers from bipolar disorder, and I'm so sad. I know that it does not mean he is crazy or anything, but I wanted some advice on what to do and say, and what not to do and what not to say. I just need some advice on some things I should not do, because I don't want to say the wrong thing around him. Thank you in advance." Okay, so here's the thing. When it comes to people who have bipolar disorder, a lot of times we have this image in our head that they're super crazy or super violent. And they're everyday regular people that have regular human emotions, thoughts and feelings, dreams and aspirations. They're not this just crazy person that society makes them to be. So I would encourage you to just simply go to your friend and say, you know, "I really care about you. I understand that you're battling with bipolar disorder, and I really want to know ways that I can support you. And I also would like to know things that I shouldn't say, because I don't want to say anything that's very triggering." And it's as simple as that. If you have any questions, then you can ask them if they would be willing to explain more about their struggles with bipolar disorder. And then also you can look up bipolar disorder, a simple Google search, and a lot of things will come up, and you can learn about it that way as well. If your friend is not ready to talk about it at this time, because sometimes people are not in a space where they're ready to talk about it, you just may have to take some time to educate yourself on it, and then just let your friend know when he's ready to talk about it that you will be there for him. Because again, you care about him and you want to see him do well, and you're just not really sure about the things to say, and you really don't want to offend him. So I would start there. You can feel free to write me back in and let me know how it goes. So that's it for this week's show. I hope that you enjoyed it, that you obtained some new information when it comes to bipolar disorder. I pray that you have a blessed week. I am sending positive vibes, and I look forward to talking with you next week. I hope that you obtain tools and resources from the Fireflies Unite podcast to help you manage your mental health. But please do not use it as a substitute for a relationship with a licensed therapist or psychiatrist. Let's continue the conversation by following me on Fireflies Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.